don't want a dirt chute. Wrong hole!
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
You are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I'm your host for today, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and as you may notice, I am flying solo this week simply because life got very busy for us here in the birdcage, such as it is here in Guelph, Ontario, Canada. Alex had to step out this week, mostly due to some prior family commitments, and Tristan, more or less, time just kind of ran out this week. But then again, if you're a longtime listener of Twig since 2007, you know originally I used to do the Twig Nerd News Network all by myself for a couple of years. So this is kind of a return to form, a welcome distraction, if you will. So I'll kind of start things off talking about my week, what has been going on, what's coming up with the show this past week. And a lot has actually been going on. Some good news on my behalf. As you guys know, my birthday was last week. Had a fantastic time. Got some late stuff in the mail this week. My good friend Lewis, a.k.a. Linkara, hooked me up with a Lord Draken figure. And he was able to send that off a little while ago. It just arrived this past week. And that's part of the Power Morphicon exclusives that were available at that event from August this year. And like many Lord Drakens, mine also suffers from the same loose torso and hip joints. However, mine are just tight enough that my Lord Draken can stand up on his own. Now he sits on the shelf next to the unmasked Green Ranger Funko Pop of Tommy Oliver and beside the White Ranger Legacy figure. Now I just have to wait for the GameStop exclusives to release the Green Ranger, I think they're re-releasing, as well as the metallic pink, and then I'll have the entire Mighty Morphin team in their metallic armors, or their metallic color schemes anyway. Looking forward to that. Some of the toys I hope I never have to get rid of, because I'm a huge Power Rangers fan, and it's just been nice to have been able to have collected these thanks to many friends, such as Cliva, who's a big friend and fan of the show, and Jen, who's actually up visiting this week. That's actually something to talk about for just a few minutes. Jen McMiler, a.k.a. Jelly Swirl on Twitter, came up this week from the States, brought us all sorts of seasonal goodies for us to try. She brought up this didn't come up a lot sooner. Venom came out in theaters earlier this month, and there's a tie-in with Brisk Iced Tea. And surprisingly, Canada didn't get the dark cherry limeade that goes along with Venom. Jen was able to get me a couple of the 710s and a couple of the 2 liters for it. And God damn, is that good. I am so surprised Canada didn't get in on this. Because you think typically with fast food, or not fast food, with drinks and stuff like that, we'd get it. But I don't think we had the Mountain Dew World of Warcrafts from a couple years ago either. When I went to Washington a number of years back, I was able to pick up all the different Mountain Dew flavors that were tied into WoW, which I think it was Cataclysm at that time, if I remember right. But we got literally pumpkin spice everything. We got pumpkin spice, like Cheerios and Frosted Flakes. Got all the Halloween cereals, because I'm a huge fan of those. So I've never had Fruit Brute before, so that, or Frankenberry, whatever it is. So that's pretty awesome. So Jen's up for a few days. Now, as you guys know, earlier in September, The original Twig mascot, Logan, my black and white cat, passed away. And Jen has spent the last little while working on a tattoo design for me. And she finally finished it. Now, I was supposed to go get it this weekend. However, the number of shops we were looking at do not fit the wheelchair clearance of my particular wheelchair. So we've got to continue the search and figure out what we're going to do with it. But hopefully I'll get Logan tattooed on my arm, hopefully before things get too bad later on this year. Also going to send a huge shout out. And I want you guys to check out this particular website. It's bearbearmoose.com. Bear spelled like you've got a bear ass. Bear as in don't fuck with the bear. And then moose as in Bullwinkle. So bearbearmoose.com. It's a shop on Etsy. It's actually run by my cousin Blake. By marriage, and he made me this kick-ass dice tray. It's all made out of wood. It's been wood burned. It looks phenomenal, and I'm going to be using this thing for the Cambridge Chronicles, which is coming up. We're starting to record Shadowrun. We actually had a huge world talk this weekend between Alex and Tristan, trying to figure out what their characters are going to be as they enter the sixth world of 2054 set in Toronto. And we're going to record those and release those hopefully in the next couple of weeks as the Terrible Warriors feed for Cambridge Chronicles has been Marvel, World War One, and we've just been kind of taking our time getting things set up because now that the winter is finally starting to get here, we got to start figuring out schedules and the drive to pick up Alex is not always the most pleasant because we happen to live in the snow belt where we currently are. So it's a constant pain in the ass. But I do appreciate Tristan and Alex coming to my birdcage as we set up the new adventures of these two Shadowrunners as they encounter what surely will be an adventure to remember, or so I hope. So, what's coming up on the show this week? Well, I got a lot of cool elements to talk about. Alex has his very in-depth review of Starlink coming to us from Ubisoft. We're also going to be looking at another game this week, and that's DC LEGO Supervillains coming to us from Warner Brothers, and that'll be just after Satan's Pantry. This is Satan's Pantry. This week, we will once again be diving into the world of Fallout from Insight Editions and their Vault Dwellers official cookbook by Victoria Rosenthal. And I believe this week we're trying Instamash, if I'm not mistaken, which is a common food stuff you can find in that game in and around the Commonwealth of Boston or the Capital Wasteland. But before we go any further into the show, got to thank our sponsor of LibrisArcana.com. Be sure to check them out, whether you're in Canada, the US, or around the world. They are a very proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net, and their services are something I cannot recommend highly enough. So let's get to our first element. This is Alex, and we are talking about Starlink Battle for Atlas.
One of my most personally anticipated games of the last year or so has been Starlink, the first game developed by the Ubisoft studio created in Toronto. So it's actually pretty close to home in that it's a Canadian-made game, just basically an hour's drive away. So what is Starlink? People have been saying, you know, is it just a Toys for to Life game? Is it just for kids? What is this? And I'm going to take a few minutes and sort of explain something that I didn't feel they did a very good job of explaining initially in their ad campaigns for it. So what is Starlink? Starlink is sort of a hybrid between the storytelling of like a Mass Effect game with the shooter elements of like a Star Fox, No Man's Sky style hybrid, and mix into that the Toys to Life of the Skylanders franchises. So it sort of takes the best bits of each and puts them all into one package. I won't go into the story because this is a fairly story-driven game, and actually that's kind of surprising considering people think of Toys to Life games as just being ways to basically milk people for money, and that's not the case with this. in the case of Starlink, you don't actually need any of the additional toys that come outside of the box when you first buy the package. So you don't need to buy the extra ships, the extra weapon packs, or the extra pilots. They do add to the experience, though, because each have unique abilities, and the weapons are elemental-based and can help greatly in uncovering extra things in the world. But you don't need them for the main story mode of the game. That being said, you don't actually have to buy them physical either. If you're somebody who doesn't want the collection, you know, taking up space on your shelf, and you're not into the toy aspect, which, admittedly, they're really cool, you can actually get a digital package that gets all of the weapons and all of the pilots and all the ships together at a cheaper price because you're not paying for something, you know, physical that's a toy. Now, as for the toys themselves, they're actually of pretty high quality. They're not going to be something like a high-end model kit or anything because they have to be durable enough for kids to play with them. So you get them, the wings snap on, there's the little base that you put in my case I had the Joy-Cons because it's the Switch version, but you put your controller in and it snaps onto the controller, and you can change the pilots and the ships and everything on the fly, and they have little tiny little chip readers in them that on the fly in the game, the second you pop it in, it'll automatically switch to a completely different weapon and you can continue on as if nothing happened. It takes maybe half a second for it to switch on the screen. You can also pick the weapons up, put them backwards, make them fire backwards. And again, everything can be done digitally in the game as well. I've played both in the mode of having the actual physical assets plugged in because I was sent a bunch of the ships to try, which are pretty good. I do honestly think it's a little steep for $40 in Canadian money for each of the ships. You're not going to really buy more than one, especially if you bought the Switch version. There's really no need to buy another ship because you get the R-Wing, you get Star Fox, the exclusive character. There's nothing that's really going to be advantageous to get anything else unless you're going to buy them digitally. And there is an advantage in if you die, you can swap ships and continue from where you left off without having to respawn from somewhere before. So the more ships you have, essentially the more lives you have to continue with immediately. But I don't think you're really going to, unless you're a big, big collector, need to buy every single piece. So you can sort of pick and choose if you think it looks cool, if it adds, you know, a sort of aesthetic that you like to it. But again, it's very, very, very optional. They were very good at making sure that there was no sort of paywall, brick wall that you had to get stuck at that you have to buy the ships for. You can buy the game for the $100 and just play it through. So it just enhances it with extra missions and whatnot. So as far as the gaming mechanic, the Toys to Life mechanic, it works. It's not essential, but it does enhance it. So for graphics, this is the surprising thing. I thought that this would have to have some sacrifices on it for the Switch version, being that it's not nearly as powerful a machine, but it almost feels like they might have been developing this game for the Switch in mind, because not only does it have all the extra Star Fox parts that have their own cutscenes and missions and everything, and it feels very integrated, it's very, very smooth. Like, I'd be hard-pressed to think that it drops below 60 frames a second at 1080p when you're playing, and it's gorgeous on the Switch. I've seen it played on the PS4 and the Xbox, and it doesn't seem to look much better at all. Maybe some draw distances and some of the PS4 Pro or the Xbox One X. But this is not a game that is super, super, graphically intense that it's going to make the Switch struggle at all. As a matter of fact, it might be one of the best looking games on the Switch. I was blown away. I had my brother came over and he looked while I was playing for review. And he said, oh, did you get it on the PS4? And I said, no, that wasn't playing on the PS4, that was playing on the Switch. I will say this, I do prefer to play with the digital characters on the fly where I can swap them and I can use the Pro Controller that way. I find that because my hands are big, because I'm a grown man, that the little mounting kit that you put your Joy-Cons in with the little ship on top, it becomes cumbersome to move around if you've got bigger thumbs and bigger hands. That's more for kids or for show. For all your little ships and all your characters and everything. I do think this plays much, much better with the Pro Controller, and I would suggest if anybody's playing it on other systems, it probably works better with the main controller than using any other piece of plastic that they sort of jumbled together because it does seem a little small and it was a little cramped to get my hands in there. So I've gone, I'm not going to say anything about the story like I said, but I can touch on the different gameplay aspects of it, and it's varied enough. Each planet that you're on, you have the ability to roam around at the sort of ground level in your ship, and you can unlock certain areas that of like their artifacts, certain ruins, and you can take them back basically from the alien menace, and then it becomes a controlled area of the planet where you have extra ships and you can get extra resources through. There are some fetch quests for the observatories and the refineries, but they never feel tedious. You can do them in about 30 seconds. They're fun. The game performs so well. It's one of the most fluid, fast-moving games I've ever played. You sort of, as you play, it builds up a meter on the main screen showing you how much of the planet you've sort of liberated or have control of. Think Mass Effect when you were building your galactic readiness for when the Reapers were coming. It's that sort of idea. And there's not too many collectibles or things to worry about that it becomes unruly, but there's just enough to keep you interested, and there's varied tasks you need to do. There's a world boss at every single planet that it's not like as hard as like an MMO world boss, because this is a single player game. It's more like it's just a lot harder. Like, I've died a couple times. Even I tried different difficulties, easy, medium, hard, and it's difficult no matter what you do when you're facing the world boss, but the reward is a modification to your ship that's actually pretty cool each time you do it. Now, there's a crafting aspect to the game where you can take your loot that you've got, and there's loot everywhere, and you can refine it, you can mix them, you can clone them, and then you can add little modifications to your ship that give you things like extra defense, extra weapons, ammo, faster reloading. There's a fairly significant RPG element to this game that you might not realize when you get it, in that it's easy, you don't have to manage too much, but there's a lot of stats involved, and every time you shoot an enemy, it shows little tickers of how much damage you're doing from their HP, which is very, I guess, Borderlands-ish. If you imagine, like, if you're shooting a rapid-fire weapon, there's a million numbers popping up on screen that are very small, or you could fire a giant missile that does 10 times the damage, but it's very slow. So that's on the planet. After you go onto the planet, you can go into space and travel between the planets, and that enters into a whole new realm where you have full range of motion, up, down, left, right. It's like a full space simulator. Think like the old Colony Wars games. And when you're there, you can take on outlaws and pirates and take on giant ships that you can find more loot in, find hidden areas, and travel from planet to planet as you're uncovering the story and building up your arsenal. It's very, very well paced. There's not a moment where I felt it was sort of, off, and the difficulty is very, very straightforward. There's not a big jump or spike. It's very straightforward in that if you try to go to a planet that is a way higher level, it'll show you on the screen saying, this is a high level. You can go there, but you're probably going to have difficulty unless you're playing on easy. And I'm not going to reveal anything more. There appears to be about 6 or 7 planets you can go to. And then a whole bunch more little things that happen in space as well. And each pilot has a unique personality and unique special move you can do when you've built up your meter. If you've got the Nintendo Switch version, you're basically going to be playing as Fox, unless you're trying to level up some of the other characters to unlock extra abilities for your main mission, essentially. You, as Fox, get to press the L button, and what that does is it calls out one of your wingmen, so it'll be randomized who you get from the Star Fox series, and then it plays the Star Fox 64 theme for the first level, and they come in and they just blast everything around you. They're the best actual enhancement to the game, I think. There isn't anything on the PS4 or the Xbox that adds to it. It seems... I'm willing to bet that the Xbox and PS4 versions don't sell nearly as well. Only because you're getting less. It's not like you're getting a Ratchet character in that, or a Master Chief character or something exclusive. You get nothing exclusive when you get this. You only get something exclusive if you get the Switch version. So I'm willing to bet that it sells 3 or 4 times as much on the Switch. And if you have a Nintendo Switch, that's the version you should get. I mean, there's really no reason not to. It's great on the go. I didn't notice it drained my battery too much. So I would say it is better on the big screen because you are moving around a lot and it can be a little difficult to see some of the smaller details and things unless you have it blown up on the big screen. But it is easy to take it on the go and pause. It saves everywhere. I've never encountered an issue with crashing. This is a very, very polished game. I would give it, you know, we don't really give ratings. I give it a 9 or 9.5 out of 10. It's one of my favorite games of the year so far. And I would say definitely go out and get it. It's going to be something that should be on everybody's Christmas list this year. And it's probably going to be part of our holiday buyer's guide. So I just have to say, Ubisoft Toronto, good job.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
Thank you, Alex, for that review of Starlink. Once again, you can find that available on the Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. Though, realistically, if you're going to buy this thing, you're going to get it on the Switch. That is the console I have it for anyway. All right, well, let's dive into the news this week, such as it is and was and forever shall be, etched into the annals of history. And this one, can't say I'm totally surprised by this because it's happened a number of times and it's outrage culture. And this is taking away something that I'm actually really kind of surprised I couldn't work out, considering we live in an era of many talented writers and artists. Why is this a thing? So evidently, a Simpsons producer confirms Apu is being written out of the show following the controversy. There was an episode last year that did not go back. And there's a quote. The quote is, "It's not a step forward or a step backwards. It's just a massive step sideways." So the Simpsons have confirmed the controversial character of Apu will be cut out of future episodes. The long-running show has come under fire for its depiction of Quickie Mart owner Apu. I can't pronounce his last name. With viewers complaining the character promotes racist stereotypes of people in Indian and Asian descent. Apu first appeared in the Telltale Head episode back in 1990, voiced by white actor Hank Azaria. So the Simpsons producer, Adi Shankar, spoke to IndieWire about his attempts to crowdsource a script that tackled the quote-unquote Apu problem, which has now been rejected, so the character is going to be dropped from the show. "I've verified from multiple sources now that they're going to drop the Apu character altogether. They aren't going to make a big deal out of it or anything like that, but they'll just drop him altogether to avoid the controversy." Shankar sees the decision as a mistake, saying, "If you're a show about cultural commentary and you are too afraid to comment on the culture, especially when it's a component of the culture you had a hand in creating, then you are a show about cowardice. So not a step forward or a step backward, it's a massive step sideways. After reading all these wonderful scripts, I felt like sidestepping this issue doesn't solve it, when the whole purpose of art, I would argue, is to bring us together." Hank Azaria previously said he was willing to step aside from the Apu character following the criticism. Shankar explained that his plan was to find a script that takes a creation that was the byproduct of a predominantly Harvard-educated white male writer's room and transform it into a fresh, funny, and realistic portrayal of Indians in America. Now, one of the things that I saw years ago, or not years ago, I think earlier this year when this quote-unquote Apu problem had first reared its head, is that they were gonna maybe turn Apu into this Indian businessman, which a lot of the Indian people that I know personally own a lot of businesses. And if Apu is being portrayed as a quote-unquote racist stereotype, why not take it to maybe a funnier satire degree where perhaps he is someone who owns a bunch of businesses and say rival someone like, say, Mr. Burns in Springfield, and maybe owns more than just the Quickie Mart. He owns maybe whatever their equivalent of Walmart is, or owns multiple Quickie Marts around the city, because Springfield has never been given a definite city size. So what if he became something that could rival the nuclear plant in terms of maybe creating jobs for Springfield or just changing the economy of Springfield? There's a lot of satire in there that is quite ripe for picking apart and having some real fun with. So myself, I feel getting rid of the character without doing a send-off or something else is just, yeah, honestly, Shankar said it best. It is cowardly, because a show like The Simpsons has been part of political satire and satire in general for almost 30 seasons, and to just do it without any fanfare or anything together, yeah, that's kind of cowardly. I do not agree with that. I mean, they written characters out after Phil Hartman passed away in the 90s, where you didn't see Lionel Hutz anymore, you didn't see, hi, I'm Troy McClure, because the actor was murdered, or, yeah, it was like a murder-suicide by his wife or whatever. So there's that. Yet we're willing to lose characters like Maude Flanders and everything else, and it's just not one of those things I completely agree with. So that's unfortunate. The Simpsons have to take this particular route to sidestep a controversy when I feel they should be confronting it head-on. And it's just, it's weak sauce, for lack of a better phrase. So moving on to my next particular news item. This comes more good news. The House of Star Wars. So according to, in the wake of the disappointing box office performance of Solo, A Star Wars Story, Disney and Lucasfilm has denied... Or is basically confirming, Kathleen Kennedy has just confirmed that the Boba Fett movie is 100% dead. They're 100% focusing on The Mandalorian, which is the live-action TV series, which will be headed by Jon Favreau. And that's not a bad idea. And here's why. Because if you have, say, so many hours to make a TV show, you can definitely explore the backgrounds of these characters and do something a little bit more in depth, whereas opposed to a 2-hour movie or whatever, to explain Boba Fett's not dead, or to go back and do his past and say, okay, he is the son of Jango Fett, the clone. Then you have to reference the prequel material. Do you make it about his career when he was a young bounty hunter? Do you follow it post Return of the Jedi? Do you do it even as late as The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi? There's a lot of questions, and maybe, honestly, the Boba Fett scripts were just that. They were hot fucking garbage. And I'm a Mandalorian guy down in my heart. I love a lot of the stuff that's been written in the Expanded Universe canon, stuff like Republic Commando, for example. The Clone Wars did the Mandalorians really well. Star Wars Rebels did it really well. I haven't seen anything of Star Wars Resistance. I imagine that was left alone specifically, so the Mandalorian could be handled on its own. And I think The Mandalorian is going to be really, really, really good. I want it to be not quite Star Wars Breaking Bad, because you can't do that. There was a scrapped Star Wars game that came out, or was supposed to come out, years ago. We saw footage of it at E3, and it was Star Wars 1313. And that's what I always pictured the Boba Fett movie kind of being, was this criminal movie where maybe it's a high stakes, like, say, I don't know, it's Jason Bourne attacking bad guys. Instead, we get Boba Fett kicking ass in the middle of the night and rescuing people in his cool Mandalorian armor. Now, obviously, they couldn't get Temuera Morrison to do it because, I don't know, when you get a movie where the character is masked, the only example I can think of it where it worked was the 2012 version of Dredd. And Carl Urban did it fantastic. So you'd have to have a character that has, an actor that has enough charisma and screen presence to carry that movie. And you saw the lower part of Dredd's face, whereas having a character completely masked the whole time, the last time there was a Judge Dredd movie was the 1995 Judge Dredd movie with Sylvester Stallone. And he had the mask on in that movie for maybe 5 minutes. The rest of the time it was Sylvester Stallone's face, because honestly, a lot of people, when they go to these movies, they're going based upon the strength of the actor who happens to be leading it. So I don't know. It's difficult to say, but I think the Mandalorian will find a good balance between masked and unmasked. I'm sure they'll bring in elements of the clones. They'll mention Jango Fett. It wouldn't surprise me if we get a cameo from Captain Rex, or we see Alpha, or maybe Screwball or Oddball or something like that. But I think The Mandalorian takes place in a post Return of the Jedi Star Wars. I think it happens before Force Awakens. I think I'm not 100% sure of that. So I don't know. I mean, I can't say I'm upset with it. I have Solo: A Star Wars Story. I haven't watched it yet. I heard it was a mixed bag, so to speak. And I honestly think if you were going to lead the Star Wars universe in a different direction, Rogue One was good. I liked it. I thought it had a lot of really cool ideas. Was doing Han Solo the smartest idea? No. If I'd been in charge of Star Wars, I would have went, still would have kept Rogue One. Then I would have done Obi-Wan, because they've been talking about an Obi-Wan movie for years. Ewan McGregor says he would so do it. And you could probably still get Liam Neeson in there as Qui-Gon Jinn if you wanted him to be like a Force ghost or something like that. Or you could have it follow the Separatist War from a different point of view. Or follow what happens like before Rogue One with Obi-Wan. Because I know in the Clone Wars series, he fights Darth Maul or some shit like that. So there's a lot of EU source material they could have drawn from. So, but that's what I would have done. Because I think the character of Han Solo, and this is actually kind of funny, I saw this meme this week and it makes a lot of sense. If you look at Han Solo as a real life analog, he's a trucker who's smuggling drugs for the cartel. And honestly, he just shot a guy in a bar. And then someone else on my Facebook had posted up further to that, the only reason he came back and helped the rebels is because money, and we guilted him into it. Han Solo is not a guy to look up to, so to speak. And I'm thinking, wow, that kind of never quite thought of it like that. But then again, it's our fiction. We want all our heroes to be amazing and honorable. And Han Solo is a scoundrel we love. We honestly, Harrison Ford's charisma in that role could not be matched. And that's part of the problem with doing the whole Solo: A Star Wars Story first, or as part of the Star Wars expanded universe. It's a good character. It's a great character. But was it the right character to lead these new expanded universe Star Wars stories? No, probably not. And Boba Fett may very well have suffered the same fate, because only us Star Wars hardcore faithful know who that is. People probably have heard of Boba Fett, but they're like, isn't he dead? And that just creates a whole new thing of a whole new realm of confusion and stuff you probably don't want to deal with if you happen to be a writer or a director in Hollywood. Can't say that I blame them for it, but it is what it be is. So that's pretty much going to do it for this nerd news that happened in the world this week. I'm going to talk about some of the things that happened in the weird, wacky, and the just plain fucked up, as always, right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to Twig, otherwise known as the flagship of stupidity. As always, I am your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and we dive into the weird, wacky, the fucked up, the things that happened around the world this week, basically looking for the strangest headlines that I can find, and this one hits a little bit close to home. What do I mean by that? Well, probably just an hour down the road here. So a Toronto woman has been charged after allegedly evil spirits blessing scam. A York Region man who was age 67 handed over $600,000 to rid his home of evil spirits. A Toronto woman is being charged with fraud and pretending to practice witchcraft in what York Region police are calling an evil spirit blessing scam. This is not the first time this has actually happened. This is actually several instances that have happened over the last couple of years. So police have charged a 27-year-old self-proclaimed psychic after nearly a year-long investigation in her dealings with a 67-year-old York Region man who allegedly lost over $600,000 in the scheme. In a release sent out by police, the accused allegedly told the man he had to sell his house and transfer the money to her account in order to rid himself of evil spirits in the home. Authorities began investigating after receiving an anonymous tip about an elder financial abuse incident in November of 2017. Police say the victim claimed the woman told him she would hold on to the money until the spirits were removed. The money was not returned. The woman allegedly went on to tell the victim she needed an additional $6,000 for a ritualistic burning. The police say the man also sold his car and used credit and other sources to pay for multiple demands for money. Now, there is a possible trend. According to Toronto Police Constable Laura Nicole, we put out some information back in 2015 after we had a few incidents in Markham. These people are basically convincing you that there are these evil spirits following you and that you and your family members may be at risk. Typically, the people that are targeted in these type of scams are the elderly and those who are new to Canada, those who come from maybe a superstitious country and whatnot. Earlier this month, Halton police arrested a Milton woman with extortion, fraud, and pretending to practice witchcraft. In that case, a victim came forward claiming they had been scammed out of over $60,000. Now, I've been watching Facebook in my local region here. I live in a town called Guelph. And I actually noticed people asking for psychics a lot this year. And we've actually had a psychic on the show earlier this year, Angela Connolly, who is a psychic / channeler. And Alex is very skeptical of that, whereas I find myself more into you never know category. So I'm willing to believe, but I'm not willing to believe $600,000 or even $60,000. More like $100,000 I'm willing to take a look into it, because there are some things in this world that I've seen that I cannot explain, nor can I explain with anything other than simply that I have faith. So I feel very bad for this Halton region man, or this York region man, rather, who's out over $600,000, because it's clear this woman was not doing whatever powers that be have asked of her, because anybody who, in my personal opinion, if you're helping to rid evil spirits of someone, is it okay to make a few bucks? Maybe. You know, you're providing a service. But at the same time, yeah, that'll cost you $600,000. Clearly, you're an asshole. And hopefully those evil spirits will come to you and fuck you right over. So, moving on to my next weird story of the week. The Vatican has released a Pokemon Go clone for Catholics. A third-party developer with papal blessings from the Vatican themselves has released a free smartphone app called JC Go, which stands for Jesus Christ, and a game that's remarkably similar to Pokemon Go, probably using Google. Now, instead of catching Pokemon, players have to roam around the world to find Catholic saints and other biblical characters to join their team. It's not that word, it's close, but it's not it. Instead of attacking them, you have to answer some of their questions before they will join your team. So instead of throwing Pokeballs at them, presumably you're asking, I don't know, who is Job or why did Cain kill Abel, shit like that. There's also various items spread around in JC Go that allows players to eat, drink, and pray. Doing any of these activities will increase your stats. You can even donate to the app and receive in-game currency in return. So we've now managed to add microtransactions to religion. We've now come full circle. We are the Canadian devil. Though this game, as far as I understand, is only available in Spanish. Honestly, I kind of hope this comes over here just because I think it's kind of funny. While myself, as I previously mentioned, I do have a faith and a religion, religious-based faith system in my life, I'm not above looking at humor. As I'm pretty sure good old Jesus and God are finding this kind of funny on some level. I'd be curious to know how their Pokestops work, or their version of Pokestops. I kind of hope this gets translated in the English. I know there is a YouTube video available where you can see some actual gameplay footage of this. So, yeah, if you happen to live in the EU and are playing JC Go, please get a hold of us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. I'm remarkably curious. Not because I'm blasphemous, just because I'm really curious to know how a JC Go raid goes. Like, what the hell do you do? Do you fight Satan or something like that with your army of saints? And, oh no, Lazarus is down. It's super effective. I don't know. So I'm just really curious to know how that all goes. So that's what happened in the weird world Actually, no, that's not entirely everything that's happened in the world this week. This is a bonus story just because I just thought of it. So up here in Ontario, we have a Crown Corporation, which is a corporation that is empowered by the provincial government, called TV Ontario. TV Ontario sent a very strongly worded letter to a guy, I think he lives in Toronto. He's created the character of Tokaroo. Tokaroo is a parody of the Pokaroo, who appeared on the polka dot door in the children's show that was canceled like a million years ago. But basically, there's this giant colored character who's like, Pokaroo! And Tokaroo is meant to be a symbol, not for children, it specifically outlines that when this guy does TV interviews and whatnot, to the safe consumption of now legal cannabis in this country. And TV Ontario is like, oh, we're going to send you a strongly worded letter and you're tarnishing the reputation of the Pokaroo. No, it's clearly parody because the Pokaroo doesn't walk around with a joint that's as long as my goddamn arm. So the fact that people just, Jesus fucking Christ, it's like there has to be something for these people to do. I guess the lawyers at TVO are that bored. Like, hell, I remember what I used to watch the Pokaroo when I was still in fucking grade 9, and I knew the fucking goddamn difference. The Tokaroo has done TV interviews with Bong Man, or Super Bong Man, and evidently, like I said, TV Ontario is understandably mad. But hopefully the Tokaroo will continue spreading good and safe knowledge to all cannabis users, because now it is 100% legal across this country how you consume edibles, though are not available just yet. And I have not partaken simply because I don't know how to interact with my medication being bipolar. But it would help me manage the phantom pain of having a phantom limb, which kind of sucks if you've ever... Actually, I don't think I've ever really kind of discussed this on Twig. So phantom pain is when they cut off my leg, it still feels like it's there. And sometimes it feels like someone's grabbing the back of my non-existent leg and twisting it. So it hurts like hell. And I'm on this drug called hydromorphone, which is like morphine. And let me tell you, it's becoming less and less effective all the time. So obviously I'm not going to go on the street and give me black tar fucking heroin. No, I'm willing to try anything as long as it's recommended by my doctors, is natural and obviously not habit forming. And so yeah, there you go. That's a bonus story and a little bit of trivia about the Birdman you didn't know 10 minutes ago. So we're going to throw things over to Satan's Pantry this week, where we continue our march into the Guelph Wasteland as we prepare for Vault 76 coming out on November 14th, I believe, from Bethesda Game Studio. So we'll be back, guys, right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Now, you're already cleared for entrance in the unforeseen event of total atomic annihilation.
I'm here to pick up an order. 2 large pepperoni and a calzone. Name is Fuck You.
I mean, technically, the corpse was defiled already.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we decide to walk down the devil's grocery aisle, but we're not doing that this week. No, we are continuing to take a look at Inside Edition's Fallout, the Vault Dweller's official cookbook by Victoria Rosenthal, and we're taking a look at yet another recipe from the Wasteland. This one comes to us courtesy of the Capital Wasteland and probably the Commonwealth. We're looking at the Vault Tech approved Insta mashed potatoes. So these are the things you'd find in the game through various locations, be it the Red Rocket Diner. I'm pretty sure you can buy them from vendors, but you usually find them just lying out in the world where they literally just say Insta mash. So that immediately brings up visions of, well, mashed potatoes. And I'm joined on this particular episode of Satan's Pantry with my esteemed co-host, Mr. Christopher. Now, have you played Fallout 4 or anything? Or
only
any of the games?
A little. To be honest, the Fallout series makes me a little nauseous due to its absolute
extreme
obsession with collecting small things that are everywhere.
Yeah.
And because that's a thing, I have to do it all the time. So I'm constantly staring at the ground and moving around really fast. So I end up just nauseated and it's unpleasant. But I like the atmosphere. The theme of the game is great. And I know it's got a really established universe and a lot of fans.
So, without any further ado, we're going to try the Insta mashed potatoes. My wife is just bringing me the... we're doing this through the magic of radio, so
You'll have to excuse me. So, all right, Tristan, let's give Instamash a whirl.
That's potato.
Ooh.
Very seasoned smelling.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually just going to pull out the recipe for these while we're doing
strong
it.
Strong with the blue cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's strong with the force.
Like, although it's not terrible. I kind of like the saltiness that it adds into it.
It gives it a very unique flavor, but it's also a pleasant, unique flavor. It's not what you'd expect from mashed potatoes necessarily, but it adds a creaminess to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I'm trying to find the recipe here. It's just taking me more than a second than what I want to.
It's worth noting that Ayla is going nuts trying to get my attention so she can have some of this too, but she can't because she's a cat and it's not good to have people food.
67. Yes, Ayla, you cannot have Insta mash for whatever reason. I don't know why the hell you'd want mashed potatoes all of a sudden.
Cheese.
Yeah, maybe. There we go. Insta mash. So this has a bay leaf in it, rosemary, salt, salted butter, sour cream, half a cup of crumbled blue cheese, fresh parsley, and salt and pepper.
It sounds like it's really bad for you, but that's why it tastes so damn good.
Exactly. I mean, I'm just kind of looking at this. Now, according to this, this will give you a +1 strength stat boost for 1 hour to your special stats.
That's good to know.
It has three salts.
It's got salt, salted butter, and what was the other one?
Salt and pepper.
Okay.
But yeah, this definitely fits in with the blue and white box you'd find in the in-game Instamash. So,
absolutely.
What would you say? Would you call this a hit or a miss?
I like it. I can't stop eating it, to be honest.
Yeah, I really like the blue cheese flavor. I think Victoria Rosenthal has definitely come up with an interesting recipe.
I think it's very dependent on whether or not you like blue cheese, because it is a very dominant flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a subtle note. It is what hits you first and what hits you the entire way through. It's just, it's blue cheese mixed into with some potatoes.
But the other spices definitely help it.
Oh, yeah.
Like you couldn't just dump blue cheese and mashed potatoes and expect this to be the exact same result.
You can tell there's more to it, and it wouldn't be the same if you just added potatoes and blue cheese in a blender and went to town.
But
that sounds disgusting, actually. But it's a good flavor profile. It's very strong, but pleasant.
So that is our review from Inside Editions, the Vault Door's official cookbook. That is Instamash. And be sure to check out Amazon.com to find this cookbook or probably other fine retailers like your Chapters. And I don't know where you buy books in the States. So look around, but Amazon for sure.
A library?
Maybe. If it's still around after the bombs fall.
Crawl out through the fallout, baby. When they drop that bomb, crawl out through the fallout with the greatest of aplomb.
We are looking at LEGO DC Supervillains coming to us from Warner Brothers Games. And well, that means another LEGO game, and that means more of the same. Is that necessarily a bad thing? Not really, because LEGO DC Supervillains tries to do something a little bit different with the LEGO formula, namely by taking its story a little bit more seriously. So the setup for the game, I'm not going to reveal every story beat for it, but the basic setup is the Justice League has disappeared. They have been replaced by the crime syndicate from a different alternate Earth, and it's up to the supervillains that are left behind to actually save the planet, because Earth, that's where we keep our stuff. We kind of don't want it to go away. And the main villain of the story is someone who has been a longtime DC villain. I'm so glad to see the voice actor come back after 10 years, and that is good old Sam Fisher himself, aka Michael Ironside. Or you may remember him as the dude from Scanners who made the other guy's head blow up. But enough of that aside. So because it's a LEGO game, you know typically what to expect. It's meant for little kids. It's not all that challenging, but the game is surprisingly long. This is not something you're going to whip through in an afternoon, unlike, say, LEGO Incredibles 2, which you could whip through really, really easy. This is something that'll take you more than probably a dozen hours to get through, give or take. I think there's like 15 missions, I think, if I remember correctly. And there's over 160 characters to get a hold of from the whole depth of DC, which DC's not my big strong suit, so some of these characters I'm rather surprised to see in there, like Malcolm Merlin. I was surprised. In fact, one of the coolest things you can do, before I get too far into this, is you make your own villain at the beginning of the game. My guy is a black guy in a top hat with this techno vest on, and I have dual pistols. So I kind of fashioned myself after Deadshot, but I called myself Chop Shop because I have two guns and I'm awesome like that. And then I have heat powers. And oh yeah, you get different abilities because you're somehow related to the Amazo Robot Project, which absorbs other super abilities. So it's cool. It doesn't matter. Chop Shop is awesome. That's all you need to know. There's also a Season's Pass for this game, which allows you to download characters from the Season's Pass, and it's fairly affordable, and that does allow you to access new superpowers and whatnot when you go into free play mode. One of the things that really stands out about this game, and I want to spend most of the focus on, is the voice cast. Kevin Conroy as Batman, Mark Hamill as the Joker. The woman that played the original Harley Quinn in Batman, the animated series, Arlene Sorkin, I want to say her name was. It's not Tara Strong in this, but one of the voices that surprised me the most was Jeffrey Combs. He plays Scarecrow, and you may remember him as Wei-Un from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but he was also the Reanimator, and he has just this silky, smooth, creepy voice. I love it. I'm pretty sure the guy that plays the Riddler is the guy who's doing it from the Arkham Asylum games. I kind of wonder if it was the same dude who did it from Batman, the animated series, but I haven't seen it in so long, so you tell me. But seriously, LEGO DC Supervillains is a fantastic game, especially if you love DC. This is an instant buy. If you're getting a little sick of the DC games or the DC LEGO games, then you've kind of already seen this before with like LEGO Batman and whatnot. But then again, playing as the bad guys is a lot more fun, I think, than playing as the regular roster of heroes. So maybe check out DC Supervillains when you get a chance. Well, guys, that's the kind of show it has been here this week on Twig. I've been flying solo as your solo host, Mike Birdman Dodd. We've taken a look at Starlink Battle for Atlas, available once again on the Xbox One, PS4, and the Nintendo Switch. But we also took a look at LEGO DC Supervillains, available pretty much for those same consoles, as far as I know, and the PC. Coming up on the show this week, or coming out this week, me and Tristan are going to be doing a Battle Royale show for the prototype. We're going to talk about H1Z1, DayZ, but also the big ones, Fortnite and Call of Duty Blackout. And we just also recently found out this week, Battlefield V, or Battlefield Victory, or 5, whatever they're fucking calling it this week, has had their version of Battle Royale delayed until March 2019. So that game, as far as I'm concerned, is dead in the water. I don't care how good the single campaign is, you need that to compete now. And I was talking to Tristan, how long until Destiny adds in their own inevitable Battle Royale mode, which would actually be kind of awesome. I'd like to know how your different Guardian abilities would play into it. I'm sure it's been talked about by now. Will there be a Halo version? Because I think that's likely making sense, because Halo Infinite, despite what they're saying, it's coming next year. It fucking has to. Like, they're either going to announce it with a new Xbox, or they're going to say, hey guys, September 2019, or first quarter 2020, Halo Infinite, like that. So, I don't know. That's what we're likely going to see. I know I keep talking about Boss Roll, but I have to prepare a lot of Game Master shit this week for Terrible Warriors, which means I've been thinking a lot. And I have some ideas. So I want to talk about running your own game, giving you some good ideas, some tips and tricks and whatnot, so you can run your own adventure. Alex has planned a turd or treasure this week. We also have a Halloween commentary. We watched a movie called Bloodsuckers from Outer Space, which is just as stupid as it sounds, coming just from Vinegar Syndrome. And yeah, it's an experience. Written by comedy director Glenn Coburn, I think was the name on it. What else we got coming out this week? Oh, once again, I got to send a huge shout out, mostly because she's in the room now, to Jen, who brought up more stuff for Satan's Pantry this week. In a few weeks, we're going to be trying Vegemite. Holy fuck, I'm not looking forward to that. I've been curious for like 10 years, but that 10 years has now come, and I am dreading it. Holy shit. I didn't know what Vegemite was made out of. I know one of our friends in Australia, Luke, had talked about Vegemite or Marmite or something. It's like a yeast extract and it tastes really salty and shit. So I'm curious, and because I'm fat, I have to know. But we got more stuff coming up from the Fallout Vault Dwellers Cookbook. I know for reviews, I am just starting Red Dead Redemption 2. That's not an easy game to get into, so that will probably be a few weeks. And what else? We got Fallout's coming up for the betas. Actually got a lot of dates coming out this week for PC and PS4. Presuming the Xbox will be in there as well, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. I know Bethesda's been talking about it a lot on their social media, so be looking for that. So guys, until next time, where I'll be joined with Christopher and Alex, the producer, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, be cool, be kind, be careful. And as always, live free or die hard. I'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.